Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Hot Take. I'm your host, Blake Howard. Welcome to our first One Hot Take of the year 2026. I'm joined by my dear friend, frequent collaborator, and chief instigator of the madness that is now in its ninth year, Stu Coop.
Wowzers. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. I'm hoping that no one ever bothers to make a Nouvelle Vague-style remake of how this whole enterprise started. But we've left that for Richard Linklater and an amazing group of largely French, but one particular American actor to do. Have a listen to the trailer for one of two Richard Linklater, you know, mic drops this year, Nouvelle Vague, and then Stu and I are going to come back and talk all about it.
Celui qui est au milieu, c'est Truffaut. À sa gauche, dans son chabrol. Et celui avec les lunettes noires, c'est Jean-Luc Godard. C'est lui le vrai génie. Du moins, c'est ce qu'il te dira.
Moi, je suis prêt à réaliser. Maintenant.
Aujourd'hui, tout le monde adore la nouvelle vague.
Tout ce dont on a besoin pour faire un film, c'est d'une fille et un flingue.
On n'aura jamais Jesse Burger.
I never even said that I'd do the picture.
Voici le film en résumé. Ne montre ça à personne. Hein?
Allez, entrons dans l'histoire du cinéma.
Go.
Moteur Raoul. Moteur Raoul.
Moteur Raoul.
Moteur Raoul.
Oh, en deux semaines, on a eu 8 demi-journées de travail.
D'ailleurs, je pourrais très bien vous laisser tomber, vous et votre film.
Vous commencez à comprendre.
À demain.
Chaque film est constitué de 5 films différents. Le film qu'on écrit, le film dont on distribue les rôles,
New York Herald Tribune.
Le film qu'on tourne, le film qu'on monte et le film qu'on sort.
Jusqu'à ce que tu n'aies plus de soupe.
S'ils veulent la nouvelle vague, donnons-leur un raz-de-marée.
Okay, so it's the behind-the-scenes filming of Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless from 1960, which was obviously a landmark in the new wave, French new wave in the early 60s. It was right out of Cahiers du Cinéma, which was a magazine, a bunch of critics who were talking and praising different studio films and independent cinema around the world. And then most of them largely went off to go and make them, which is kind of the greatest aspiration for anyone who's ever done any kind of critical thinking on cinema. Like, what movie would I make if I could just throw it all at the wall, throw all the ideas I've ever had, thinking about cinema, thinking about storytelling. And so it's kind of legendary and iconic and has been already sort of like canonized, it feels like, in many different written forms, in other kinds of cinema. But Richard Linklater has sort of taken his, this is a guy who's got boundless skill for me, Stu. He's taken his kind of boundless skill and just applied it to this and told like a very, almost like documentarian style, it's a strangely documentarian style way of telling the story, making sure that every single person who was there on the peripheral or in the scenes is accounted for. and then just does these wonderful and beautiful recreations of a legendary movie with a bunch of really phenomenal actors, one of them being the great and sensational and beautiful Zoe Deutsch, and particularly Godard himself, Guillaume Marbeck, and Aubrey Dulin, who plays Jean-Paul Belmondo. What did you think of this one? I had such a delightful time watching how effortless it is to be Richard Linklater making a fucking movie.
It's funny, right? It's like we have these, we over sort of romanticize all these periods. It's a bit like the sort of midnight in Paris. Like,
yeah,
what era would you go back to find when they had it best? And yeah, we think now, we look back to this film period and we're like, imagine if you were there on the cutting edge of these things, like what a joy it must have been to go to Cannes, to be in your average cinema when these titans were dropping these things. And they've only become titans with the passing of time.
Yeah.
And we always, we have that thing like, you know, oh, imagine if you were there and you were able to see this, if you're in, you know, the 70s in America. And then we've lived through our own sort of moments of explosions of the blockbuster, of a variety of voices getting their chance in our lifetime. And so you could, there's caution when you then go and look at this through the eyes of another filmmaker. But Linklater makes the greatest hangout movies ever that have ever been made. Like yeah, he is, he, that is his thing. It's like everyone is the coolest cat in a Linklater film. They talk how you want to talk. They, you know, they dress how you want to dress. They move
they
how you
want to smoke how you want to smoke. And also, it doesn't matter if you're a nerd or a jock or a stoner or the main character or the, like, the seventh guy on a baseball team at a Texas university. You're the coolest you've ever been in your life when you're in a Richard Linklater movie.
Exactly. And this had the potential to fall into, like, you know, we've seen it with so many biopics, especially like the music ones, when someone's like tapping, like they're in a cafeteria and they're just tapping something on a table and goes, wait a minute, play that song again. What was that? You go, oh, you mean ding, and it becomes like, and everyone goes, oh, that's whatever great hit it was. Oh my goodness. Linklater throws all of that out the window and he's like, I am going for that more mockumentary. Yeah. Like the thing that hit me, this was my number two film of the year for 2025. And because it felt like a magic trick. It yeah, felt like, you know how everyone does the rounds now and then, they're like, give me Star Wars, but it's a Wes Anderson, and we get those shitty AI trailer things and it's yeah, everyone looking to the camera. This was like, give me the filming of Breathless, but it actually, it's AI and I'm walking around the set. Because yeah, I came home, I don't know if you've watched Breathless since or at least like dipped your foot back into watching it afterwards.
It's so but weird now, that I watched the Richard Gere Breathless most recently before watching this.
And then
I was away on holiday recently, so I haven't yeah, had a chance to revisit
Breathless. When you now go back and rewatch it, you're like, I was just there. I was standing on the other side of this shot in a way that it's so weird that, you know, I'm not standing there like I was. I was looking back and it, the immersion is incredible, and it gives that mockumentary style where it's sort of like cutting to the faces to sort of pay everyone their dues. Like, I mean, that's the beautiful thing. It's not just here are the names you know, like here are the top 10 people you know. This goes to people that you obviously go, look, I'm not going to pretend that I'm well-versed in this era, but you're like, here's so-and-so and here's so-and-so. It drowns you with, like, this was more than just a handful of filmmakers making their incredible things. There were so many stories being told.
And he captures, I love what you said there, because he does, he knows where he's focused, which is that beautiful, like, three steps to the left of one of the most iconic films you've ever seen. Like three steps yeah, to the left. And yeah, it's like, that's where he is. And he also captured something which is so cool and so memorable and is underrepresented in stories like this, is that it's the ecosystem and it's the encouragement and it's the strange confluence of all of these amazing voices and people and artistry that creates a new wave. It's like, not just that you're this one sort of prodigious genius who comes out of the ether, you're like hassled and pressured by your friends, and their success is like really not intimidating, but it's like it holds a high bar, and it's like they're encouraging you, and they're like, oh, well, you know, you got like Francois Truffaut and Claude Chabrol, and they're making all these movies, and they're like, oh, but just wait till you see Godard. Like, when Godard eventually
gets off his ass
and does something, it's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be just as fascinating, challenging, you know.
And it's sloppy, and it's sloppy, and it's like there are tensions, and there is doubt, and there's a fear around, and it sort of hangs in the air.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's about the only place he really does the romance. Because I listened to an interview with Linklater, and he's like, there is a fear that in this he's only doing these like half days, and he's sort of going at this rapid pace when he's making it. And that does sort of tip the hat slightly to, all right, are we dealing with a genius? Because they've got meticulous notes, and they still had 18 and 20 hour shooting days. So it wasn't this like, you know, this brash kid walking in and sticking a camera and going, yep, we got it, moving on. There were days where there were the longer takes. And so it's sort of, that's the only real, the magic trick is sort of there, where it would imply that it was a little bit more run and gun than maybe it was. But it's interesting things like the stuntman coming over the car that was never in the film, but to show that they filmed it and to sort of pay their dues to the stuntman doing the stunt.
And then him going like, no, that's rote. You know, let's not do that.
But it did, at least the stuntman did finally get their dues in Linklater's film, but someone did in fact do the stunt, and it was recognized that it was done and not just off screen. But there's a vitality to this. There's like, I swear you look around and you're like, this is Paris in this time. Like there's, again, in that same interview, he said that there's like 350 VFX shots where they basically mapped over things. And you're like, this is what I think we've always crying out for. This is where we want the apex of this sort of tech going, is just the little paints in the corner more so than we want the wondrous alien worlds necessarily on screen. Give me this. And I want to like introduce Linklater, like, has he heard of a film called Apocalypse Now?
Does he want to do the Hearts of Darkness Apocalypse Now?
Yeah, would he like to redo this in a way that, you know, like you just sit there going,
mate, I want to say, you know, you're a Star Wars fanatic, you know, and I mean like original trilogy, and we've talked about it many times and iterations on the show. It's like, what I would love a Nouvelle Vague where it was just them shooting in Tunisia.
Sure, like, sure. Like just the challenges and everything at play, the anxiety from executives. I mean, it's close to like almost what Spielberg did with Fablemans. Like that casting is was incredible.
Yeah.
But that, you capture those moments where you're like, oh, this feels like a magic trick, but it doesn't feel as alive, which is then paying. That's where the homage comes to the era.
Yeah.
Because this film just jumped off the screen. Like, everyone is incredible.
And also, the thing I love what you said about like special effects is, you know, there's been a few like speculative things in a world where we're waiting for the next James Bond to come around, and someone's like, yeah, well, why can't we just set it in that, like, you know, all these books were written by Fleming, you know, late 50s, early 60s. Why don't we just set it? And I'm like, yeah, Linklater did. He shot in the middle of Paris and they painted over it. I'm like, can't we shoot in the middle of like these old, like, you know, these European cities, these places, and just paint over them and go like, we're shooting here, there's action, there's talking, there's drama, and just like have really great VFX artists just like paint away years so that we can get back to that.
In three brushstrokes, you're in a like Cold War thriller.
Yes.
Like when you've got the eye to actually how to capture it. Like, and they're... This whole time I was just blown away. Like, maybe I was in the mood for it. It was something like, it was a little bit different. I was just, maybe it hit me at the right time, but I was like, this is, who's got a more varied filmography than Linklater? Like, who on the sort of the whiteboard of trying to map out where he's going next, it's incredible the sort of variance in his work.
And also you touched on, I think, what really resonated with me is like, and why I didn't go to this kind of, you know, unpalatable kind of gauche like version of it. It was that Richard Linklater is a guy who has the balls to make a movie like this, shoot it, and also pay the lip service, like have the portraiture almost of like, this is the person that I'm talking to. It's almost like the introductory shot in like David Fincher's Manhunter of when you're like seeing someone portray a real serial killer. Like you're seeing a real filmmaker, a real former critic of Kaya's cinema, like they're talking to like older filmmakers who they admire, talking to their peers, whatever. You see them introduced, they get their title card, like they're he's showing the environment. And then he can kind of like effortlessly just be back in the hang. And I'm just like, how many other filmmakers do I have the patience to watch this and not be infuriated by this? Like it feels so glib and easy for him. And it's really insanely difficult because we watch a lot of movies.
Who's got the restraint to move on?
Yes.
Like to just... Like there's the bit where the guy, like the it's either the owner of the magazine or the editor, like asks him for the lift afterwards. Yeah. Like he gives this rousing speech, then he's like, "Can I have a lift?" Or can I?
And it's the director. It's a famous director, and he asks him for a ride.
Kind of makes him fallible at the same time. Like everyone is a little bit flawed, and everyone's kind of bullshitting their way through it. And he doesn't shy away from that. This was at times a bit of a rickety ship, but they were just given like freedoms to go do things within parameters. Like to think that this what filmed in, what was it, 18 or 25 days shoot time.
Yeah.
Like, and it's, I think it's something, I think it's bottled magic and just, And like you say, whenever it looks this easy, it's a bit like the Coen brothers, like every single syllable means something on screen and it was captured for a reason. It's such a precise framework. Crazy to think that he filmed this in French and he doesn't speak French. So he had like, it's that collaborator, he had collaborators that were like helping him out with everything. But to think that he's an outsider peeking around this world too, I mean, it's him and Zoe Deutsch would have got sick of hanging out with each other.
I would never get sick of hanging out with Zoe Deutsch. But no. I think you nailed it, which is that there's something way more special than I was expecting. And maybe it was my mood too, but there was just something so much more special in this than I had foreseen. And I'm so glad that I saw it. And I just also, it just makes me think, you know, this year is the 10-year anniversary of Everybody Wants Some. And I just Richard Linklater also, which the second Linklater movie, which I have not seen yet, which I've heard is brilliant, is also Blue Moon, getting a lot of nominations at the moment. I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list to see, but it's recently released now Nouvelle Vague in Australian cinemas. And I'm really excited. And I hope that not just cinephiles can get along. And as you said, there's no one who makes a hangout movie as fun as Richard Linklater. And there just seems to be no one who does what we have learned from loving movies and watching movies so voraciously, does incredibly hard things so easily, like shooting over 12 years or whatever.
Well, 20 years as he's currently doing. He's currently got a 20-year, but you mentioned Everyone Wants Some. It's like no one has delivered on what the Glenn Powell promise was in that film.
Yeah.
Even Glenn Powell himself, like if you go back and watch that now, that Glenn, like, it's him and Wyatt Russell just dominate that movie and Zoe Deutsch. But I hope that gets its dues again. Like it felt like that came and went under the specter that it was like the sort of the loose sequel, like the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
But my goodness, it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. And there's an Ephus and Everybody Wants Some double feature waiting, and there you go.
And that's why, like, this and Breathless, like, it's so easy to do, but my goodness, that's why it was number two. It pipped a lot of stuff right at the end of the year that was like a lot bigger and bolder, and this just came in and went, "Foop, see ya, it's this and daylight." So, I absolutely adored it.
Glad to hear it. I'm looking forward to more people seeing it so I can talk to more folks about it. And I'm overdue on my Breathless rewatch after it, but I almost want to do the back-to-back and have a bit of fun. But it's
rewarding.
It's been a few movies between. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Stu, thank you as always for joining and chatting, and we'll catch you on another episode of One Hot Take in amongst all of the great shows on One Heat Minute Productions very soon.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown score second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.